welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Monday, and that's Mondays with Sandy Williams, and tomorrow is Election Day, and I do believe, and I'm biased, but this conversation that we're having right now couldn't better be positioned than it is right now, the day before election. And Sandy, before we go to the phone lines, we're not telling people not to vote.
No, okay? In fact, just quite the contrary. I'm pointing all this out as being the mechanisms that exist that we need to deal with. But mainly what people need to do is vote. And they need to vote in the rural space in the state. They need to vote in the suburbs. They need to vote in the city. Everyone needs to vote. If, you know, there are places where you actually pay a fine if you don't vote. I think in Australia you have to vote or you pay a fine. And if we had that kind of requirement, we could stop all this cynicism that exists about trying to suppress votes, and because everyone would understand, no, everybody's going to vote, and we have to deal with the interests of everyone when we campaign, and both parties would be carrying out that function. But no, people really need to vote, and they need to vote to make sure that what the Founding Fathers had in mind does occur, which is, number one, the vote, that everyone who can vote will vote, and so that's my top cry for today. But the other one is that I think the parties need to understand, and the Democratic Party in particular needs to understand how this system works and how it is that they need to be reaching out to the rural folk and speak to their socioeconomic interests. Because you know what? Most of the rural vote, which has become red, involves people who are seriously voting against their socioeconomic interest. And we have to help them understand that. They have to be led to understand that, and people should begin to understand the cynical kinds of pressures that are being applied that are causing people to vote against their socioeconomic interests.
All right, let's go to Dave from Mequon. Good morning to you, Dave. You say what?
Hey, good morning. I'm going to push back on David from San Francisco for just a moment here. It should be noted, and he can look this up very easily with NPR, Rand Paul came out immediately against what happened with Nancy Pelosi's husband, because he was attacked in 2017.
One guy, though, Dave.
Yeah. No, Steve Scalise was another one.
Well, okay,
Steve Scalise, Mike Simpson.
The majority of the people, Republicans, did not.
Well, and I wonder how much difference all that makes anyway. If we're going to talk about issues that are important, the fact that Dave from San Francisco brought that up hardly raises it to a level of national importance. The whole thing was screwy. It was clearly the action of a crazed person. It was probably a person crazed from the right. I mean, he did seem to have right wing theories that he was expressing. The episode was crazy. The outcome was violent, was awful. But let me urge our radio show to talk about something other than whether or not people apologized.
Yeah. Well, so I agree with that sentiment. However, if you did notice, there was a congressman, a Republican congressman, where his family was attacked. They had bullet holes in the house just a few days ago. I think it was in North Carolina.
I don't think
from this show's standpoint, I don't think anyone from this station is trying to suggest that the attack on Nancy Pelosi's husband is the reason why someone ought to vote one way or the other. It does reflect, and so does what you just described, reflect the extent to which this nation has become fractionalized, and we have people in the fractionalized sides of this country willing to do crazy things. And if we want to look at the predominance of that, I think it is probably clear that more of that has happened from the direction of the right than from the left. But okay, let's move on.
Yeah. So Dave, let's address the lightning bolt that Sandy Williams has talked about. With where we are right now in this country, and those who are doing everything within their power to seize control of this nation.
Well, I personally feel the fact of the matter is this, is that you have a lot of people on both sides, and I agree with Tom in L.A. with the whole sentiment about, and he's always said this, with the amount of money going into politics. It's very mean-spirited, and it's not doing anything.
We're not talking about
better.
Sandy was very concise.
I'm just throwing my... I'm putting my thoughts out there. But in regards with what Sandy's been saying is this, is that there are parents, there are many parents, unfortunately, and people right now, they're worried about inflation. They're worried about the economy. They're worried about, you know, how are they going to feed their kids? Do they feel safe? And when I say do they feel safe, I mean, unfortunately, the randomness
of the right.
If you look at the state of New York, why are so many Democrats going over to Zetland for governor in New York? He has a potential of pulling that off in the state of New York, which is a solidly blue.
Dave, you're trying to, again, with all due respect, man, Sandy pointed out clearly the inherent dangers of some folk in this country that are doing everything within their power to kind of move the nation into a different direction that gives power to a group of people. That's, you know, I know the Republican narrative is, well, you know, we're worried about the economy. I get all of that. But let's address the depth of the conversation that Sandy was talking
about.
Well,
and the problem is that we can talk about the issues you just described, crime, for instance. The fact is that crime has not become a more serious problem in most geographic areas of this country, statistically, okay? And it has become a more serious...
I disagree with you.
Well, no, there's statistics that demonstrate that it has not become...
The statistics have been showing that it's been dramatically going up.
I said geographically. Crime has been going up in the cities. It has not been going up in many other locales. And in fact, crime has gone down. And so we can parse the facts, but crime is not an issue in the places that people want to talk about it. I mean, crime is a problem within the cities, and the victims of those crimes are basically those city dwellers who live within the cities. And yet the Republicans have stoked the notion that crime is rampant across the country and that people need to be locking their doors and being afraid of crime in their locales, when in fact statistics don't bear that out at all. And so we end up stoking emotional issues in the way and inflation to the extent, for instance, I heard today some of the Republican senators talking about how the interest rate on our federal debt was going to become a serious burden and that therefore we had to now start addressing our fiscal policies. Where were the Republicans when Trump was cutting the taxes on that issue? Where were the Republicans during the Bush second administration when we were running massive deficits in both the Trump and the Bush periods when we were in economic boom periods? I mean, I'm just saying, let's just call a spade a spade. I'm not saying that the Democrats are necessarily much less profligate, but there's no question in my mind, and there's no question statistically, that the national debt has suffered under Republicans, and that the fiscal policies, and that actually the economic success of our countries, when measured over the last 75 years, as comparing Democratic to Republican administrations, favor the Democrats, actually. But go ahead.
I'm just going to just say this. So in reality, as far as with the tax cuts, I mean, if you remember when we passed that in the state, they said we're going to be running all sorts of deficits. Even though we cut taxes in the state of Wisconsin, we have a huge surplus. It's a matter of budgeting and prioritizing with what you're trying to do.
Well, at the federal
level, let's be honest.
Yeah.
I agree with you, Sandy, that the fact that, yes, Republicans and Democrats have been just spending money like drunken sailors. We passed trillions and trillions of dollars over the past few years, because of COVID and climate change.
Under COVID, it had to be done.
Well, Well, that's where I disagree. That the government made a huge mistake by shutting down businesses. It screwed up everything as far as supply chains.
Okay.
It screwed up. Businesses were put. I mean, many people lost their jobs or their livelihood.
So we don't need to go back over that, because last week I explained thoroughly what Donald Trump did leading up to COVID, which brought that about because of his failure to address it. So, you know, it's easy to then come back and say,
have we addressed it yet? We're still having thousands of people dying of COVID.
But in terms of looking at the progression of things and looking at, as you said, we have to learn to prioritize. Mm-hmm. There's an elephant in the room when we talk about that, and the elephant in that room is clearly defense expenditures. If we don't put our arms around and start addressing the extent to which the United States spends a hugely disproportionate amount of our budget on defense expenditures to the exclusion of a bunch of other policies that might go into effect that would actually help the people of this country, we're just going to ignore things, and we're going to end up, you know, if we're going to talk about spending money we don't have, we have to look at the defense budget, because we have spent an enormous amount of money that we don't have in the defense budget, and we can talk about whether there's peace in the world or not, but the fact is that the we haven't spent money in the defense budget in any manner that could be directly tied to the security of the United States, depending on how you define the security of the United States.
So Dave, hang on. Dave. Bob from Cedarburg, we're going to come to you right after the break. CJ, hang on. We've got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. We'll continue the conversation. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. We'll be right back. Bob, you're up next. To the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. It's Monday. That means Mondays with Sandy Williams. Tomorrow is Election Day, and let's go to the phone lines. And Bob from Cedarburg. Good morning, Bob. You say what?
Hi, guys. I was listening to what Sandy was saying about that the Democrats are possibly going to lose the election by not being pro-life. And as a rule of order, I understand that.
You're talking over me.
Yeah, you don't give me a chance. I'm going to end the call right now.
Well, you can end the call. Goodbye. That's fine. I mean, when did you ever say anything about?
I didn't.
Pro-life. Okay, so he wants to end the call because he calls into our show, and he wants to give out erroneous information. And when I go to correct him, he hangs up the phone. Okay,
that's kind of funny to me, honestly.
He waits all that time, and
he just said I didn't. Like he literally didn't say that.
No, and he says, "Well, I'm a rural caller." Okay, so. All right. But anyway.
Well, no, I did say that the Democrats, that the Republicans and Democrats were possibly deflecting interest, and that the Republicans had attracted the rural vote by focusing on issues of crime and abortion, right to life issues, and deflecting the interests of those people from their real socioeconomic interests. I I said that. That's not saying that the Democrats were going to lose the election because of the abortion. But.
Well, and the fact that he did not even want to have a dialogue or a conversation. He wanted to call in and dictate.
Yeah, I think, I think that a conversation that we were having before these calls started was basically my notion that right now there's this cynical use of the tools of the Republican form, of the Republic, not the Republican Party, but the Republic form of government. Use of those tools cynically by conservatives and Republicans to try and overcome the will of the majority in a very overt and cynical way, and that it was important that people get out and vote, and that we understand that this is what's ongoing, and if it happens, that this whole notion of the voters having control of their own, of the destiny of the country will go by the boards, and we'll find out that a republic really, in many respects, can be the control of those who are landowners, who are property owners,
right.
People who have resources. Yes.
All right, let's go to CJ. Hey, CJ, what's going on?
Hi, Earl and Sandy. Thanks for taking my call. I consider myself the truth detector to you two because, yes, and it is obvious when someone makes an example.
Do you disagree with what Sandy just said?
About the rule?
No. The conversation we're talking about is this notion that the tools of the republic are being deployed in a manner that is designed and is being cynically designed to try to overcome the will of the majority by using the tools of the republic system, which are, you know, the electoral college, the U.S. Senate, the notion that the state houses could be set up in a manner that would be controlled by a party that does not hold the numerical sway in the state, but rather the lines are drawn for districting in a manner that gives them
that
sway.
One man, one vote disappears.
Well, that would disappear if we end the Electoral College, because neither your gentleman's vote or my vote would matter if we end the Electoral College.
Let me just ask about that, because I don't. Do you understand the Electoral College? Huh. So when you elect the president of the United States currently, you cast a vote in the national election, and that vote is counted state by state. And if a state's if you win if in Wisconsin, your side, the whoever you're voting for, wins the election in Wisconsin, then what happens at that point? Do you understand what happens with respect to the Electoral College at that point?
Yes.
What happens?
But you know what?
No. CJ, wait. What happens in the state? What happens in that circumstance when
you explain it to me? You're going to do it anyway, so go ahead and explain it to me.
Well. This is where it breaks down, because in the last election, the view was that what should happen is that the candidate who wins the most votes in the state wins the Electoral College delegates from that state. Now, the Electoral College delegates are not reflective of one man, one vote. You understand that. The Electoral College votes from the state of Wisconsin are equivalent to the number of congressional districts we have plus the U.S. Senate representation that we have. And so we get that many Electoral College votes. The same is true for Wyoming. Wyoming gets two Electoral College votes for their two senators, just like we do, just like California does.
Which is not densely populated.
So Wyoming is very undensely populated. California is very densely populated, and they get the Electoral College votes.
Which makes no sense.
Well, it makes the sense that the Founding Fathers had for it. But what was happening on January 6th and thereafter was that the view was taken by the Trump candidate campaign that even though someone won the Electoral College votes of their state, the Electoral College was free to cast votes as they chose, okay? And we don't elect the Electoral College members. The Electoral College voters are selected by each of their parties. So you end up with a slate of electors that you didn't vote for. Did you vote for Bob Spindell?
I probably might.
No, you didn't.
So hang on, guys. We got to go to break. So hang on, CJ. We got to go to break. Dave, I see you. We'll come back to you. Be right back. Back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Monday. That's Mondays with Sandy Williams. And you know, I was just trying to have a truthful dialogue and conversation about what has transpired in this nation, what is happening. Nobody can tell me that as we go to the polls tomorrow, that people really think that the nation is headed in the right direction, and that there are people who are frustrated, as there are people who are going to be standing over people's shoulders and arguing about whether somebody has a right to vote or not. And we didn't have that in this country for a long, long time. And we certainly didn't have it to the degree that we're having it now until Donald Trump lost his election. And yet, here we are now with all of these inherent dangerous threats to people whose job it is to just make sure that people get a right to vote. I mean, all those things. And Sandy explained so eloquently and understandably why all these things are happening. And that's what I wanted to focus on in these conversations. But, you know, we can't help getting back to the talking points. CJ, go ahead.
Well, I don't consider them talking points, Earl, because when we respond to things that are said, sometimes you gentlemen, like you did one of the previous callers, say, well, that really doesn't matter. But you say it does up till the point we point out facts. And I do appreciate you guys taking my call.
Again, what are the facts?
A couple of things real quick that you said as topics. Your Democrat Party has spent $5 trillion in the last 2 years. More people have died under Joe Biden as president than Donald Trump.
Died from what?
David Axelrod, your own Democratic man, said, stop just focusing on abortion, and your party voted with no restrictions up to the day before the baby's born, and you criticize people. I want to know what their restrictions are. What are your restrictions? No restrictions, because that's what Chuck Schumer believes, till the day before it's born. And your party is finally focused on things that matter to America. You were warned not to spend all this money. Inflation, 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 because it's the economy, stupid. It's not this threat of ending democracy. It's like a Hail Mary pass because you guys, your party's going to lose big because you're finally hearing what people care about. And you haven't. The president doesn't. He had another gaffe over the weekend. They're trying to backtrack on. Going to end. We're closing coal 80% of our energy comes from coal, nuclear, and natural gas. And this baffles me how you guys still support this man. He's bought and paid for by China. You refuse to even look at it. We now know that Zuckerberg.
These are all facts,
the
right?
FBI, the FBI.
CJ, these are all facts, right? Is that what you're saying? These are all facts.
The FBI is politicized. The FBI and CIA are politicized by this president. And your party doesn't care.
Well, let's just care about the 13 soldiers
in Afghanistan.
Listen, man, that's enough. Okay, all right, go ahead.
Well, I'm kind of amazed that someone could think that a president could get into office and in his first 2 years could politicize the CIA and the FBI. You know, the Republicans have had as many years in office as the Democrats over the last 20 years, and have been in a position to politicize those organizations. And, you know,
the rest of it is not even
well
to me.
No, I mean, the fact is that, you know, there are talking points in a campaign and there's always a kernel behind them that is sufficiently based on some fact or other that they have some compelling power within a campaign. But the fact is that inflation is a situation we have. Who should we lay the blame for inflation on? Well, there are a whole bunch of fact circumstances to point at, very few of which reside in the current administration. Some of them reside in all of the prior administrations, and some of them reside in a set of facts that have arisen in the world as the result of fortuities. The war in Ukraine, the pandemic, the dislocation of the supply chains, the shortages we have, all these things have a basis. In fact, but they aren't really attributable to the current administration at all.
I, you know, CJ and them just take us off of where we're trying to go, and you know, with all due respect, you know, there's a reason why we have a focus on the direction that we want the conversation to go. But here, Sandy, why I think it's so important. Let's say the Republicans now get everything that they want, that they wind up winning the House and the Senate, okay? Let's say that's so. And then they get total control of many of the states, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is what can possibly happen. And so I'm wondering what Republicans, average everyday Joe Republicans, rural Republicans, think they're going to get out of that if these Republicans win everything.
Well,
do they think that all of a sudden now that the Republicans in leadership are going to pivot and focus on the people who live in rural areas and do what's necessary to change their lives?
Well, that's the real problem, and it's sort of like in all these elections we've had these dog chasing a car kind of arguments where people can get all emotional and arm wave at one another and talk just the way CJ did about crime here and this problem there. Now, if the Republicans actually take control of the state house, for instance, in Wisconsin, how is it that from the standpoint of the State House in Wisconsin, they will solve the crime problem in the city of Milwaukee? How is it from the State House in Wisconsin, is it that they will address the outcomes of education in the Milwaukee Public School District? How is it that they will address the socioeconomic circumstances that relate to both of those problems, and the fact is that it's all been arm waving, and it isn't related to the state jurisdiction, these issues, other than the fact that we should have improved financial support for instance, education in the city of Milwaukee. And we should give the city of Milwaukee the capacity to raise its tax revenues as needed to meet its own socioeconomic circumstances. So it's going to be dog catch his car in most of these jurisdictions. And these people in the rural community who have decided that they are essentially all red.
What are they going to get out of it?
Well, yeah, that's the thing. They aren't going to get anything out of it. There isn't much to be gotten out of it. And the way they've been scared into being red is that they have a view that their particular socioeconomic circumstances are being ignored. Much of that fright has been based on dog whistle issues like crime in the cities, which doesn't relate to the rural circumstance. And then the social issues, the transgender, LGBT, the things that seem foreign to them, this whole woke thing that is definitely an urban sort of elite issue as far as they're concerned. All of that is a sparkly object that is keeping them from looking at the world from the standpoint of their real social economic interests. And so I hope that this show reaches people like that and that they think about this so that they don't vote foolishly against their interest and they vote in a manner that reflects their social economic interest, which would not be pure red, I'll tell you.
Dave from Mequon again. Dave?
And to finish up really quickly, if you don't mind, Sandy, this is directed towards you with the Electoral College. If you know what's been going on, there's one thing I'm just going to bring up. It's not going to be eliminated, but there's a lot of states, and they're all Democratic states, they're going for the National Popular Vote Interstate Compact. Essentially means with this compact, the states in the compact agree that rather than giving the presidential electors to the candidate who wins the most votes in that state, they will award all their electors to the candidate who wins the most popular votes in the country. So let's say, hypothetically, Wisconsin were to go in that direction. We could potentially have a situation where our state goes for a complete opposite of who we want for president. But based on the popular vote, based on this new idea that is almost at, it's not, I think it takes 270 votes to actually do this national popular vote interstate compact. I know Tom Hartman brought it up a couple of years ago, and he's no longer on the program, but that's scary to me. So we're essentially, the state of Wisconsin, even if we go to elect somebody, it's going to be wiped out because it's not going to matter. The electors are going to end up going to whoever wins the national popular vote, which means the state of California, which has 55 electoral votes right now, we have about, I think, 10. Our 10 votes, our 10 electoral votes become worthless. Because if we just base it on the popular vote,
let's talk about this for a minute. You're right that it would change the Electoral College. The Electoral College is meant to be different than a one person one vote outcome. Do you have a belief that the American system is based on one person one vote? Because if you do, then you wouldn't have any problem with the national headcount determining who it is that becomes president. Because I think most people believe, if you asked anybody out on the street, if someone wins the national headcount vote, 170 million to 155 million, are they the president of the United States? And their answer would be, well, of course they are. But, of course, with the Electoral College, that isn't the case necessarily at all. Because
I understand that, but I was going to also say, in addition, there are two outlier states, Nebraska and Maine, where they will divvy up their electoral votes based on who wins the presidency and...
Well, they divvy it up by congressional district. But
yes.
That's begging the question. You wanted to point out the horror of Wisconsin deciding to join this compact and casting its electoral college votes to reflect the national headcount. I'm simply saying that compact is designed to achieve the outcome that most people in America think would be the outcome anyway, which is that the national headcount is the way you decide who becomes president.
Yeah, but then you give way too much power to the most populous states. That's the whole reason why that was put in place. was that when we had, when the country was founded, that was a big argument.
I'm not disagreeing with you that that was the basis on which the U.S. Senate was created, and it was also the basis for the Electoral College. I'm simply saying that most people in this country don't understand that difference, okay? And most people in this country think that the national headcount is what prevails for who is elected president. And to the extent that we get a deviation from that, at least we all ought to have our eyes open, and we ought to understand the extent to which, for instance, the rural vote being cast in a red manner will result potentially in a president being elected who will not reflect the socioeconomic interests of those people.
So what is it, Dave? One person, one vote, or all the rest of it? Okay? At the root of it all is one person, one vote. That's the way it's always been. And if now they want to look at it from some other perspective, then they need to do away with one person, one vote.
Well, and let me just say that the reason why this has come into... it's become highlighted again. This used to be the subject of some debate back in the 1800s at some points, but it all relates to this differential between the rural and urban vote. And the fact that states have this, that we have a red rural areas and blue urban areas is what has resulted in the Electoral College being so tight.
We got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. We'll be right back. Dave. All right. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Monday. It's Mondays with Sandy Williams. Make sure you go out and vote tomorrow. By the way, I'm going to be joined by Vice President Kamala Harris on tomorrow, as well as Governor Tony Evers. They'll be joining me on the air tomorrow. Let's go to Dave from California. Hey, Dave, go ahead.
Well, thanks, Earl. And, if you're going to have Kamala in with you tomorrow, I helped get her elected back when she was running for district attorney. I was the moderator for a debate between her and the existing DA, and so give her a tip of the hat. The existing DA didn't show up. He showed up 45 minutes late.
What is your thought about the Sandy and his assessment of where we are?
Well, first thing I'd raise, you know, one man, one vote used to be what we strived for. But when the crooked Supreme Court gave us Citizens United, it became $1, one vote. The voice of a millionaire is worth that he gets to spend. Sky's the limit for trying to get one of his cronies elected. And so it became $1, one vote. And that's when the Supreme Court obviously became corrupted, because what Trump is trying to crush his rhinos. Even the rhinos couldn't get anybody elected if it was organized crime flooding secret money. That was the second ruling that the crooked Supreme Court came up with, that secret money could be plunged into elections and nobody had to report where the secret money came from. Organized crime. And so when you start to talk about the rural counties, whether the rural counties are going to get anything out of a guy like Trump, they're going to get organized crime. And when you start looking at, I don't know if you've mentioned the death threats to the election board officials.
Yeah, we talked about it.
And when you look over at Michigan, for example, and in Nevada, I think Nevada lost 10, what was it, out of 17 counties, 10 of them, the resignations of election board people, and most of those were rural counties. So these the sheriffs apparently would not protect the election board people from death threats. So people ought to look at whether or not these sheriffs should get reelected if they're going to allow the election board people to get death threats and not do anything
about it. And so when you look at Donald Trump as a real estate broker, real estate developer, wouldn't he love to have corruption in rural counties where he could get hundreds of acres, if not tens of thousands of acres, cheap?
So Dave, in line with the subject that matter that we've been talking about and Sandy's views on just what is happening, what is taking place here, so people understand that who think that the Republican Party and what they stand for is fighting for them and their rights and offering them, you know, something completely different than Republicans. Sandy has kind of made it clear that there's something going on in depth that is, you know, you hear a Democrat say, well, democracy is at stake. And there are people who kind of poo-poo that. What are your thoughts?
Well, it's a social contract is at stake. Whether or not we live in a republic or whether we live in a democratic republic, a republic is anything that's not a king, right? That's the basic definition of it in the dictionary. And when you start looking at a dictatorship, Adolf Hitler was officially a republic, but a republic still required some sort of a vote. He got corruption. He got elected through corruption in voting. He convinced a lot of people not to vote. There were a number of, you know, denying people the ability to vote is a form of corruption for dictatorships. But when you start looking at the social contract, where that's how we got rid of the king in 1776, that the king pretended that God put him in charge, but he was really a phony, and he was sucking all of the 13 colonies' tax money over to London and having a party with it. So he was never reinvesting in the 13 colonies, and everybody was starving because this guy wouldn't fix a bridge, he wouldn't fix the town square, he wouldn't fix anything. And he basically laughed and had drunken parties with the tax dollars.
So are you...
The social contract is voided up in Russia, where oligarchs run the whole show and run it like a company town.
So do you foresee any of those things happening here?
Well, it's already happening. I mean, when you start looking at the monopolies that are just allowed to expand and expand and expand, Elon Musk, look at this guy. He was a con artist when he fled California and went to Texas. He was a con artist, and so when Pelosi, there was an assassination attempt against Pelosi, Elon Musk comes out with a tweet that is so filled with lies that America is still trying to deal with each and every one of the lies that Elon Musk shot out to his 112 million supporters, and so we're still looking at an assassination attempt as if it was a joke. And you know, Elon Musk was a con artist that cost America hundreds of millions of dollars, probably billions when it comes to it, for the security costs that he caused with that stupid tweet. And then he's got the gall to be able to launch top-secret rockets with SpaceX. I'm for yanking his security clearance. Let's make Elon Musk a poor pauper living on the street again, because he is nothing but a con artist that Texas has welcomed.
All right, Dave. Thank you very much for the call.
Is that Sandy? Enough?
Yeah. That was quite a broadside, you know, and I think it's a distraction to start focusing on a personality like Elon Musk. Elon Musk has obviously done some dramatic things from an economic standpoint in terms of being a pioneer with electric automobiles and all sorts of things. Thomas Edison was a very controversial guy, and obviously someone who makes a lot of money isn't necessarily a positive personality in all regards. So but I think it's a waste of time to focus on Elon Musk and how he might have reacted. I don't think Elon Musk is a creature of the current political environment. I think what is a problem is that the current political environment, if the people of this country don't wake up and start reflecting their real socioeconomic interests, are going to cause disproportionate representation of people with economic power in government. We have a we have this republic system of government that is reflected in the U.S. Senate and the Electoral College, and we have a party that's deploying those tools as cynically as possible to magnify to the maximum extent possible the disproportionate power that those tools can provide to avoid one person, one vote being the prevailing power in this country. We need to make sure that everybody votes to magnify the power of one person, one vote, and then we need to have the parties, particularly the Democratic Party, wake up and reflect the interests across the country.
All right, we got to go to break. We'll be right back.